Well, I'll say Shabbat Shalom as always. So, lately we've been talking about establishing what we've called a bedrock foundation. I don't know if I can get this to work here the way I want it. That didn't work. There we go. Anyway, yeah, so we've been talking about this bedrock idea, an idea that is centered around the fact that in many parts of what we generally call our faith, it doesn't really take any faith to come to. It's a logical train of facts that lead to the theistic belief system. So what I proposed was that it really doesn't take faith to believe in God, does it? You know, the evidence is all around us, the evidence is in us. We ourselves are evidence for God. I also proposed that it doesn't take faith to believe that Yeshua is God, because by demonstrating his power over life and death, he was demonstrating power that only the Creator can have. So in going through processing of the facts, one can come to a logical conclusion, not only of the existence of God, but who that God is. And I termed that bedrock, something that we need to individually do, and it is then those facts that then we base our walk of faith on. Okay? You know, there is knowing God. See, the creation declares that there is God, right? So that men are without excuse. But it does take faith to follow God. The fact is that the Bible says that without faith, it is impossible to please God. But it doesn't say it takes faith to know there is a God. Actually, I much prefer the word trust to faith in that context. The word faith in our society has taken on this kind of nuance that, and it's used in contexts where we get used to hearing it that way, and that is that faith is something that is unprovable. So if there's something that's unprovable, it takes faith. Okay, but actually, by that definition, you don't need faith to believe in God, because God is provable. Yeshua being God is provable. So based on that definition, truly, when you think about it, even when you begin to move in to our walk of faith, which involves us, once we know God, to trust God, that's why I like that word, to trust God to move forward and believe what He says and order our life after it, even when we don't think the same way, that's faith. But actually, as you move through that process, that even becomes something that's not faith, because when God shows us the way to walk and we do it, what does that do? It proves to us that His ways work. So the more we do that, the less faith it requires, because we've proven it. So we move from believing in God to beginning to walk in faith. And as we walk in faith, then the more of those things that required faith don't require faith anymore, because now they're facts to us, because we've lived them, we've proved them. And so I hope that I've communicated that we need to first establish that bedrock of facts to know God and to know Christ. It takes no faith, because it's facts if you really do dive in there. And so then once we know God and once we know Christ, then we can trust them and walk in faith to follow them. We start that journey. Okay? We listen to what they say and we trust that it's the best for us. Right? That's why I like that word trust. And it changes our lives and we come into agreement with Him. Now, And I get it. You know, you can use the word faith. I'm not saying that the word faith is not any good and we should use trust because in place of it. But I hope that kind of delineates kind of the difference here. I mean, I personally like the word trust better because I think it better defines the relationship. You know, I don't have to have faith that God hears my prayers. I know He does because I've proven, even extra biblically, that He exists, right? And I know the kind of power He has based on the universe that He's created. So I like that word trust, personally. At any rate, that's what we've been discussing lately. And I've encouraged each of you to go through this process personally so that you are standing on bedrock when people or circumstances come against you to make you question your trust in God. And I think it's a good practice for the church as a whole, because I fear there are far too many Christians out there that have not taken the time to do this. There's too many Christians out there that still say, and you can hear them say, that they have faith that Christ is the Messiah. They have faith that God exists. They have faith that God loves them. None of these things require faith if you have done your work, done your homework, set your bedrock. Because without that bedrock, faith becomes, in that setting, I propose, becomes more like hope. When the storms come, hope can diminish pretty quickly. And so when you stand on bedrock, it's not hope anymore. I don't have to hope that if I drop this, it's going to fall. And that's the same thing with knowing and knowing that God is there, that Christ is Messiah. It's not hope. It's not faith. It is factual information. And you can stand on that bedrock. And so when the storms come, when the pressures come, you're not hoping during that storm that everything's going to be okay. What you're doing is you're trusting that everything is going to be okay. It's two different things, standing firm. So, again, establishing this bedrock of facts is important for every believer. And in addition, as I've had this kind of on my mind, there's another application to all these bedrock facts. And that is to be able to give an answer to those that are not yet believers. And so we talked, well, the week before last, or the last time we met, about apologetics. That was before the wedding. Apologetics has really been on my mind ever since. We are theists, meaning that we believe in a God that created everything. Now, there are those that don't believe in God, and they're called atheists. Okay, so you have theists and you have atheists, people that don't believe there's a God. Oh, the only other category is pantheists, and they believe that God is in everything, is everywhere. So I saw an illustration once. If you want to kind of put a picture in your mind, think of three globes. You have one globe has hands underneath it, okay? That's theist. In other words, God is holding up the world. He created the world and is holding it up, okay? Then you have pantheists, and you just see the globe, and the hands are in the globe, okay? Not under it, they're just, the hand is in it. God is the world. He is Mother Nature. Okay, that's pantheism, right? Then you have atheists, which then the globe is just all by itself, and it's just all nothing but naturalism, materialism. We'll get into that here in a minute. So, but concerning atheists, which we're going to talk about a little bit today, they don't believe in a creator at all. They are because of that, if there's no creator and all there is nature and material, they're actually also called materialists. Materialists believe that everything, the universe, all of it, has as its source a natural source. It's everything is just atoms, molecules, and everything material. Okay? That's a materialist. So today what I'm doing is I'm going to start a small series. It won't be too long, few Sabbaths. And we're going to continue this discussion on apologetics. And in a sense, I'm moving from applying this bedrock discussion inside the church to moving this discussion to those outside of the church. Okay, we're kind of making that transition. And this series, this first part of this, which is basically a book report, I'm going to go over this book. See the title on the screen, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. It says, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. It's written by Frank Turek, and I don't know, we watched a clip of his when he gave that commencement address a few Sabbaths ago, again before the wedding. The premise here is that atheists need some of the things that God created in order to be able to put forth their materialistic views. They have to have them. And I think when I read this book, he made a very strong case for it. In fact, I started listening to a few of his debates that he had with some prominent atheists where he put forth these assertions. And in the ones that I watched, three different atheists, they were not able to answer them. They either, in their intellectual pompousness, just kind of dodged around them. A couple of others, when addressed with these things, turned and went on an attack of God. So they couldn't answer the question, so they just attacked God. And I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, because... why do you go and attack God when you're claiming that he doesn't exist? And it was kind of funny because I love the way Frank summed up those debaters. He said, at the end of the day, basically what they say is, God doesn't exist and I hate him. God doesn't exist and I hate him. What we find is all scientific evidence does point to a creator, and it points to an intellect, an intelligence that transcends the material. But these men are so angry at God that they simply refuse to acknowledge it. And when backed into a corner, they just come out and attack God's character. And that's why Frank sums up their arguments that God doesn't exist and I hate him. And they hate the fact that they need him. They hate that. They need what he provides to try to construct their materialistic view. Frank says this, he said, they sit on God's lap and slap his face. And I think that's pretty poignant. But that's what the book is about, and so I'm going to attempt to share kind of the highlights of it for you, and I'll begin with this quote from the introduction of the book. Says, what I mean is, atheists are using aspects of reality to argue against God that would not exist if atheism, materialism, that's my insert, were true. In other words, when atheists give arguments for their atheistic worldview, they are stealing from a theistic worldview to make their case. In effect, they are stealing from God in order to argue against him. These aspects of reality are so much a part of our common sense that many atheists seem to take them for granted. But they simply can't exist if atheism is true. Theism can explain them, but atheism cannot. I got this book because that premise sounded interesting to me, and it was, and it is. The book is divided into six main sections, six main things that atheists use in their worldview that cannot exist without their worldview. And very cleverly, he writes that since it's stealing, that stealing is a crime, he uses the acrostic crimes, C-R-I-M-E-S, to divide the chapters. So that's how the book is laid out in this acrostic crimes, C-R-I-M-E-S, into these six areas where atheists are committing the crime of stealing from God. And they are these: causality, reason, information and intentionality, morality, evil, and science. Now, you might look at this. I mean, I did. I looked at it right away. I'm like, okay, well, morality, evil, and especially science, well, those are things that the atheists use to argue against God. But as we go through these things, you're going to see that these would not exist unless God existed, unless there was an intelligence behind the materialistic world. Those things would not exist. And you're going to get there through logic. No Bible references. No. This is a logical transition in thought. So before we jump in and tackle the first one, which is causality, I want to do what Frank did in the introduction and define some terms. Define what we mean as God to begin with. For the purposes of addressing an atheistic worldview, we need to define God. Now, we have a definition of God that is biblically based. I understand that. But what we want to get is the definition, what is God, in an atheistic discussion, okay? Too many people think of God as the big genie in the sky. Professing Christians walk away when they're disappointed that he doesn't do what they think he ought to do. Atheists are just plain mad at him. They have come and they have sat down and they have judged God and they have found him wanting. And so because of that, they dismiss him. God doesn't exist and I hate him. However, God does have recognizable, knowable, provable traits that don't need sacred texts in order to understand them or to be able to see them and verify them. Here again from the book, self-existing. And we're going to, when we go through some of this stuff, these things are going to be expanded on. But self-existing means it's not caused by another. It's the foundation of all being. Infinite. This being must be unlimited. He must be completely maximized. He must be whole, fully actualized. Simple, undivided in being, meaning he's not made up of parts. Immaterial. He's not material. We're going to get into that. You can't have material, you know, come from material, okay? He is spaceless. He is timeless. He transcends time. He had no beginning and will have no end. He's omnipotent. He can do whatever is logically possible. Don't give me can God create a stone so big that he can't move it? That is illogical. God can do anything that is logically possible. He's omnipresent. He is omnipotent, all-knowing. He knows everything that can be known at the time, every single possible state, okay? He's immutable, meaning he changes not. He's the standard by which everything else is measured. He is holy, morally perfect. We're going to get into morality in this from a non-biblical point of view. That's what's so interesting about this. And he's also personal. Why? Because he has to have a mind. You see, if you have something that creates, he had to make a choice to create. So he has to have a mind. He has to have a motive. He has to have a will. Okay? So it's important to define these terms, because when you read or listen to atheists, they don't attack this God. That's not who they attack. They go to the Bible and they attack the God of the Bible that they don't understand. They start whining about him, you know, sending Israel in to cleanse the land and you know, a global flood that killed everybody, and oh, he's just this you know, hateful, vengeful person that is trying to destroy mankind. Okay? They cite the flood story and you know, other stories as being impossible. And that's who they attack. So, but because they don't understand that God. But we don't have to have that conversation. That conversation comes later. Once you prove that there is God, then that's a whole nother part of this series and part of where we're going. Once you have that, then you have to go looking for the right God. That's a whole nother set of progressions and logic, okay? What we're talking about here is what better defines the world we live in, the theistic worldview or the atheistic worldview, okay? Because what they're attacking here is what Frank calls a straw God. They're not attacking the self-existing, immaterial, spaceless, timeless God that can be proven by the world around us. Okay? So that's first. Okay, one more thing before we dive into causality. And that is this, that many atheists will say, look, you don't understand what atheism is. What I'm saying is, I don't believe, I just simply have a lack in belief in God. I don't have a belief system. They're trying to remove themselves from the discussion by saying, look, I don't have a belief system. No, I don't have a belief system. I don't believe in God. You're the one that believes in God, so all the burden of proof is on you, not me. I don't have to answer these questions. See, and when you get that, when I talked about that pompous intellectuality, that's where that comes from. He produces these things and they're like, oh, well, I don't have a belief system. You know, I don't have this religious mindset, and you are the one that has to prove these things. I mean, literally, that tone of voice and that pompous, ugh, just makes you sick, right? But it's not true. The atheist tries to sideline just by trying to say, I don't believe. I have nothing to prove you do. And it's not intellectually honest in the discussion. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to have a discussion about the facts. And the atheist, in saying those things, is merely making a claim about his or her personal state of mind. Right? And they don't sit in a vacuum. We're trying to have a conversation about the facts about these things, and they're trying to make a claim about their personal state of mind. It's two entirely different things. And their state of mind doesn't sit in a vacuum. If atheism is simply a lack of belief in God by a material blob of atoms and molecules, which is what they claim they are, then that means rocks, trees, this house, that chair, your car keys, they're all atheists. Because what are they? They're blobs of atoms and molecules and whatever that don't believe in God. So An intellectually honest person has to admit that a true atheist is one that believes there is no God. Okay? Therefore, they have to, their burden of proof is to try to prove all that we see around us without that God. Right? They have to come up with an explanation for the world and the universe apart from God. And that, ladies and germs, makes them a materialist. They are a materialist. And so you can move, if you have an atheist that is saying, well, I just don't believe. Well, if there's no God, then all you believe in is what's here, right? Yep. Then you're a materialist. Now we can have a discussion between a theist and a materialist, okay? And each side has to have has the burden of proof to answer the big questions. And so what we want to do is move that conversation from does God exist to what I said before, what better explains reality? Theism or atheism? And I agree with that. Because when you get to that discussion, the atheist, the materialist, has a big problem. Why? Because everything, if everything, was caused by materials and consists only of materials, there's a whole bunch of things they can't explain. They can't explain the beginning of the universe. They can't explain the fine-tuning of the universe. They can't explain the laws of nature. Think about that. Is a law material? Is a law made up of atoms and molecules? No. Where do the laws come from? If everything has to come from material, where do the laws come from? The laws of logic. I just used logic. Where did that come from? It's not material. It's not atoms. The laws of mathematics. Math is all through the universe. It's constructed uniformly. What about information? Genetic code in our bodies. DNA, protein structures. We're going to get into that a little bit later. We're going to talk about micro and macro evolution. Okay? You can have microevolution. Yeah, it happens all the time. But let me tell you, science has proven that the proteins, there is a gap between the protein strings and the DNA that is never, it cannot jump. And that's what creates the different species. All of that information did not come from atoms. It has to come from somewhere else. Life. Life itself, they can't explain where did life come from. We're going to get into that a little bit. It's very, very cool. Mind and consciousness. We're going to talk some about that today. Okay. Free will. So that's not atoms. Objective morality. Objective morality. And evil. None of these things, good and evil. What's good? What is objective morality? What is good? What is evil? An atheist can sit and hem-haw around and stumble and try to address maybe one or two of these in a materialistic way. But they can't cover them. Laws are not material. Free will is not material. Information is not material. And we'll address these things as we move through crimes. But the point is that we can't allow atheists to hide behind their lacking definition and say that they just have a lack of belief in God. No, a true atheist is someone who believes there is no God. They become a materialist and they have the burden of proof to show how materialism is true and reality can be explained without an intellect outside of the material universe. Therefore, the title of the book. They have to steal these things from God and use them as a base for their materialistic viewpoint that can't provide them. Okay, let's dive into crimes. C is causality. He says, to doubt the law of causality is to doubt virtually everything we know about reality. And what's interesting about this is it includes our ability to reason and do science. All arguments, all thinking, all science, and all aspects of life depend on the law of causality. What is the law of causality? It says that everything that has a beginning has a cause. For every effect, there is a cause. Science goes out and looks for, and it sees effects, and it searches for the cause. Why? Because they know there's this law of causality. Every effect has a cause. Every beginning has a cause. It's nothing new. Clear back in the Middle Ages, men realized this, that if there was an infinite number, now this is going to, some of this stuff will give you brain cramps if you're not focused. If there is an infinite number of days past, we would never get to today. Today would not exist if there was an infinite number of days ahead of us. That's how time works. See, this infinite God is not in that time construct. So from a material viewpoint, if there was an infinite number of days past, we'd never get to today. Wouldn't be here. In order for us to know time that we know as the present, as right now, as today, there has to be a beginning of that time. This constructs the cosmological argument, and it goes like this. Everything that has a beginning has a cause. That's the law of causality. Okay? Nobody can argue with that. So that's the premise. The universe had a beginning. Now that science now agrees with that, but we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Therefore, the universe had a cause. That's the law of causality. Everything that has a beginning has a cause. There's no doubt about that. The universe had a beginning. Therefore, the universe had a cause. Okay? Now, until the 20th century, scientists thought the universe was eternal. But now, much to the chagrin of atheists, science has now shown us, proven that the universe has a beginning. This is now accepted, proven scientific fact. The atheists don't argue with it. They can't argue with it. It is fact. And that is this, that time, space, and matter had a definite beginning. Meaning prior to that beginning, there was no time, space, or matter. Okay? And so the problem with the atheistic viewpoint is that if space, time, and matter had a beginning, then whatever caused it must transcend space, time, and matter. Those three things have been proven. So if they had a beginning, whatever caused that beginning had to transcend those things, space, time, and matter. That's why Frank refers to God as a spaceless, timeless, immaterial intellect. Because to give those things as the originator of it, the cause, that cause must be outside space, time, and matter. As that fact comes into reality, you realize that the cause must also be extremely powerful, right? Extremely powerful. And then it has to be personal enough to make the choice, to make the decision, to have the will to say, yes, I want to make this. I want to cause this to happen. Now, this is just a reasonable and sound line of thinking. there's no faith here, but it's based on the law of causality and the scientific facts that the universe had a beginning. All we're doing, there's no theology here, there's no religion here. All we're doing is following the facts to their logical conclusion. So what's the atheistic answer? It cracks me up. It's why one of his other books. What they'll tell you is, well, just give us enough time and we'll figure it out. Just give us enough time. Just give us enough time. You know? They will tell you that if we give us enough time, nature will show us how it happened. Now, that's what they'll say. I've heard that many times through all of these debates I've listened to. Nature, the material universe, will show us. We just haven't found it yet.
They are correct.
Okay? Now, let me ask you a question. This is just logic, not turning in any scripture here. How can nature create itself? This was made. Is there any logical way that you can perceive, even if you give it a tree, that a tree made this? That it created itself? If what is created is the material world, how did the material world create the material world? See, here's what's interesting. We get this argument, well, you guys just use God in the gaps. We stand above that. We're searching for the truth. And when we go see the gaps, we're not looking to just shove God in it. You guys do this God of the gaps thing. They'll say that theists just put gods in wherever we don't understand something. That's not the case. When theists conclude that God is the cause of the universe, they're not arguing. We are not arguing from something that we don't know, a gap. We are logically following the facts. We're following the evidence. Since space, time, and matter had a beginning, we know the cause has to be outside of space, time, and matter. We're not going to be looking for the cause inside of space, time, and matter because it can't happen. It's impossible. Nature cannot find a cause for itself. So who's guilty of filling in the gaps? The atheists. What do they fill it with? Time and chance. They fill with time and chance. That's their fallback. Who's guilty of filling in the gaps? Their God is time and chance. You don't know something? Well, give us a zillion years and it'll happen. Just accidentally. Chance doesn't produce anything. Chance is a, I don't know, what word would you use for chance? It's not anything. Chance isn't anything. It's not material. But they're telling us that chance is what's going to create all this stuff. But chance isn't material, and they're materialists. Makes no sense. No matter how much time you give it, nature can't be a cause for itself. The universe can't cause the universe. It's like saying that given enough time, science will discover how I gave birth to my mom. Think about that a minute. That's what they're saying. Give me enough time and I'm going to figure out how I gave birth to her. That's their theory of the universe. It's ridiculous. And not only that, one of the most validated laws of the scientific community is the second law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics. And what that says is this, that the energy that's in the universe is a set amount of energy. And when you transfer energy from one form to another form, some of that energy is lost. It's not a perfect transfer. Any mechanical engineer, anybody will, it's a law, okay? If I turn an engine this way and I want something to make it go like, actually an engine goes like this and we're turning it into something that goes like this. It's not efficient. That energy is lost in that. And that is what's happening in the entire universe. The energy in the entire universe, as it changes forms and moves through it, diminishes. At some point in time, it's a long way from now, thankfully, that energy will completely diminish. Our universe is like a battery, and one day the battery will run out. This is scientifically proven fact. Okay? And so part of that second law of thermodynamics is the law of entropy. And it's just a fancy way of saying that nature on its own tends to bring disorder rather than order. You know, evolution wants us to believe that things got better and better and better as nature progressed. Does not work that way, ever. Okay, the law of entropy means that things tend to go towards disorder. If you take and cut up little red, white, and blue pieces of cloth and dump them from an airplane at 1,000 feet and expect them to come down and form an American flag on the ground, is it going to happen? No, because the law of entropy will create more disorder. You could even have it in that form and let go of it in those pieces. And it's going to go to disorder. And time doesn't help. Take that plane to 10,000 feet and dump those same pieces out, and it'll be more of a mess, not less. Time doesn't help, okay? So what this tells you is another proof that the universe is not eternal. Why? Why? I said, if there's time back eternally, we'd never get to today. If the universe is decaying, second law of thermodynamics, and the energy is leaving the universe, and there was an eternal amount of days past, eternal, we wouldn't have any energy today. It'd all be gone. We wouldn't exist. The universe wouldn't be here. Because it is losing its power, it had to have a beginning. Because if the beginning was eternal, it'd be gone by now. So that's following the evidence. That's following the facts. The law of physics prove it. So when we look at this scientific evidence, it leads us to one of two options, only two. That no one created something out of nothing. That's the atheistic's view. No one created something out of nothing. Or the theist's view, someone created something out of nothing. Now, look at which one is more reasonable? Atheists claim to be these champions of reason and logic. But where is their reasoning for number one? It's certainly not reasonable, is it? No. Number two is the reasonable answer. Yet, surprisingly, they show great faith. Faith that one day, given enough time and enough chance, they'll figure out how number one can be possible. Now, I did find a book that claimed to have this answer. Dr. Lawrence Krauss wrote a book, Lawrence Krauss wrote this book, A Universe from Nothing, Why There Is Something Rather Than Nothing. And, you know, in looking through this and spot reading it, it came. I didn't read this whole book. It wasn't worth my time. But it came down to this, to me, was the definition of nothing. His definition of nothing. See, Dr. Krauss wrote this whole book on the premise that the universe could have come into being from a quantum vacuum. Quantum vacuum. And that's what he calls nothing. But a quantum vacuum is something, isn't it? Now, what is nothing? I mean, the kids know what nothing is. What's nothing? Nothing, right? Zero, zilch, nada, it's nothing. Well, a quantum vacuum is something. It consists of fluctuating energy in there. And atoms and molecules seem to, not atoms and molecules, but these weird particles seem to kind of pop in and out of existence. And so he goes on this long thing trying to say that then this is how the universe could have been created, out of this quantum vacuum. But the universe was made of nothing. Nothing! I think it was Einstein that said, and I think Frank even quoted it in that thing he did, that nothing, Einstein said, nothing is what rocks think about. Nothing is nothing. Okay? And so when you take a quantum vacuum, which is something, you're using what God created to try to make your case. You're stealing from God. This whole book was stealing from God. What God made, a quantum vacuum, and then calling it nothing and trying to cite that natural thing created nature. They cite the law of causality. They cite it over and over again until it leads to an intellect, until it leads to God. When it comes to a creator, the law of causality is thrown out the window. At the foundation of science is the law of causality. Science depends on the law of causality. You know, a lot of people argue about what the definition of science is, but at a minimum, it's a search for causes. It's either, you know, today's causes, or forensic science looks for causes in the past. But either way, it's a search for causes. That's what scientists are trying to do. They're trying to decide, to discover what currently is or what was in the past the cause of a particular effect. The entire scientific community depends on cause and effect. If things can come into existence without causes, then there's literally no way anybody can do science. They can't do science because that's what they're looking for, is the causes. In a debate that I found between this man and Dr. Turek, Frank tried to get Krauss to see the error in his logic by referring to his mind, and he asked him, he said, if all things are material, then what is your mind? Now, Frank asked that question deliberately because either way that Dr. Krauss chooses to answer that, the materialistic view is defeated. If he says that the mind is not merely physical, that there's an immaterial aspect to it, then he's denying his own assertion as a materialist. Now he's saying, okay, nope, the mind is outside of that. So now he can't be a materialist anymore. He can't be an atheist anymore. Okay? Because why? Because his physical book, that book, if he says that his mind is not material, then that book, that physical thing, material thing, was created by something immaterial, his mind. Right? Now, if he says, no, my mind is my brain, so it was my physical brain alone, all the molecules and the atoms and the firing around in there that created this. No, I'm just material. Then why should we believe it? Why should we believe it? Why should we have any trust in it, any faith in it, if it's just atoms and molecules? How can it? How can anything be believed? You destroy the whole foundation of philosophy. And the conclusion is unavoidable due to the nature of materialism. He says this. Materialists like Dr. Krauss, that's why I looked up his book, have no other choice than to assert that our thoughts are determined completely by physical reactions in the brain. He has to say that because he's a materialist. For a materialist, the laws of physics determine everything we think and do. Now, if that's the case, if we are mere meat machines without free will, then we have no justification to believe anything we think, including any thought that atheism is true. As meat machines completely determined by the laws of physics, we cannot, this is cool, right here, this is the point, we cannot reason, we can only react. If we're just atoms and molecules, we have no way to reason. That if it's all just physics, we're just reacting. We aren't thinking. We're only subject to the physical and therefore can't reason outside of it. If all we are is material, you can't step out of that and see it for what it is, right? He says later in his book, Frank does, that in order to know that you're some sort of soft, fleshly robot, you have to be more than a robot to see it. You won't have any consciousness that that's what you are, right? So you can't make a claim that that's what you are unless you can think outside of it to see it. So either way, it doesn't work. The atheistic worldview is full of these self-defeating statements, often exempting themselves from their own claims and theories, just like this one. You know, put it as a question. If everyone is a molecular machine, then why do atheists act as if they can freely and reasonably arrive at atheistic conclusions? They can't. They claim that everything is material and physical, but then have to exempt themselves from that in order to be able to make the claim have any validity. For the atheist, causality is fine as long as it's physical. Okay. I even heard one on a debate say that when causality was brought up, he says, well, causality only applies to the physical. Well, if it only applies to the physical, then you're implying that there's something other than the physical. Circular. All this circular reasoning. Anyway, the bottom line is they have to exempt themselves from their theories in order to establish them. Lastly, atheists will always come back with, well, if God caused the universe, then what caused God? The question in itself is ridiculous, because it actually skews the law of causality. What was the law of causality? That everything that has a beginning has a cause, right? Well, the law of causality is that everything that has a beginning has a cause, or every effect has a cause, but not every effect has a cause. See, we've shown that the universe had a beginning. And so if it had a beginning, then it had an intellect that was spaceless, timeless, and immaterial. Well, if it's timeless, then it doesn't have a beginning. So the law of causality is everything that has a beginning has a cause, but this does not have a beginning. It doesn't apply. It just doesn't apply. You know, and even science they try to put that on us and they don't even apply it themselves in this infinite regress of causes. You don't see an archaeologist, a scientist, he's a scientist studying archaeology. He doesn't go into a cave and see hieroglyphics on the cave wall and says, well, these can't be from an intelligence unless I can determine the exact person that wrote it. that you don't have to have an infinite regress of causes in order to prove one layer of it. You go into the cave and you say, an intelligence wrote that. An intelligence did that. I don't have to know who did it in order to know that an intelligence did it. A spaceless, timeless, right, intellect did this, right? You don't have to know who at that point, you just have to know what. And that's what we're talking about when we define God for an atheistic argument. We're talking about what did it. Now, once you confirm that there's a what that did it, then you can move into researching and delving in and trying to prove and decide who is the what. It's a different conversation. Don't let them meld the two together. We're not talking about who, we're talking about what. Okay? Big difference. Where am I? Prominent atheists admit that atheists and theists have the problem of explaining how everything got started. And because time had a beginning, whatever started it is eternal. And that is either the universe or something beyond it. And because the universe can't start itself, and since all the evidence shows that the universe had a beginning, then it's the theists that are the ones that are following the evidence where it leads. The atheists simply have blind faith that some other explanation, given time and chance, will be found. So to sum up the crime of stealing the law of causality from God, I'll read this final quote from the book. If an atheist wants to say that the creation of space, time, and matter didn't need a cause, that it is an effect which is an exception to the law of causality, then he has to support his claim with evidence. But any attempt to get such evidence creates a big problem. If the person cites scientific experiments or observation as the source for his evidence, then point out that the experiments and observations presuppose cause and effect. Okay? You can't do that. You couldn't make those observations or draw any conclusions without the law of causality. Likewise, any process of reasoning he uses would also use the very law of causality he would be denying. In other words, it's self-defeating rationally and scientifically to conclude that effects do not need causes. That's because any denial of the law of causality uses the law of causality. Again, the atheist attempts to exempt himself from his own theory. In other words, what he's saying is consistently applied. The law of causality only points to one conclusion, that a spaceless, timeless, immaterial intellect source outside of the physical material universe caused it to come into effect. This is also shown by the fine-tuning of the universe. Don't have time to go into that now. I think we've covered it, some of the other things, some of those deals. So I've done that before. So we have set the stage for crimes. Covered causality today. Next week we'll move through, I don't know, however many more. 1, 2, 5, whatever. We'll get there. And we'll go from here. So for now, let's huddle up and let's talk about causality and also the premise of the book, if you want, whatever's on your mind. All right.